You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with WGBH Radio in Boston.
Nothing went right in the life of Renard Marcel Daniel until he got a three-judge panel of the 11th Circuit to hear his case.
That's Andrew Cohen, their senior editor at the Marshall Project, with the latest case in point. It's the story of Renard Marcel Daniel, who in 2003 was convicted of a double murder in Alabama. But to understand the full scope of this crime and its journey through the American justice system, you have to go further back in Daniel's life.
It's a horrible story. This is a young boy who, at the age of three, was in his home when his mother murdered his father. She eventually remarried. Her second husband had psychological problems, PTSD, a former a member of the military who engaged in abuse and sexual violence against the children. This is a man, Renard Daniel, who had intellectual disabilities as he went through school, never really helped in any meaningful way, and then he commits a double murder, or at least he's convicted of committing a double murder after a trial in which his attorneys barely offered any defense during the penalty phase. Once he was convicted, they brought one witness to the stand, his mother, even though they had essentially thousands of pages of information and evidence they could have brought on his behalf that might have spared his life.
Renard Daniel was convicted of a double murder, sentenced to death in the state of Alabama. People might not be surprised, Andrew, to learn that Alabama might be tough on people like Mr. Daniel, but what was the problem here?
Well, the problem in the case was twofold. I think it is not a wrongful conviction case. This isn't one of those cases where Daniel is saying that he's innocent, although there were some questions about the evidence against him at trial. This was a problem with his lawyers. And the 11th Circuit, the Federal Appeals Court, which issued the ruling that looks like will spare his life, were really critical of the way the lawyers handled the cases. They didn't talk to his teachers. They didn't go into depth on the amount of abuse he had suffered, the sexual abuse, the physical abuse. They didn't go into detail about his intellectual disability. So not surprisingly, you had this conviction and you had this quick imposition of the death penalty. After the initial trial lawyers went away and they immediately asked to be taken off the case, new lawyers came in and they found all this evidence, all this mitigating evidence that should have been presented at Daniel's trial and wasn't. And so for the past decade or so, they have been trying to get the Alabama courts and then the lower federal courts to basically agree with their assessment that this was one of those cases of bad lawyering. Finally, in 2016, they get this panel on the 11th Circuit. The 11th Circuit says, yes, this is a case where there may have been ineffective assistance of counsel, and there should be a hearing down in Alabama to sort of vet these issues. Once that hearing got scheduled, prosecutors finally relented and decided to send their own state medical expert to test Daniel, to test his intellectual disability, and he scored an IQ of 48. 48 would have rendered him ineligible, I think, for the death penalty. And so prosecutors relented. There is a deal in the works that has to be signed off that would take Daniel off death row and give him a life sentence without the possibility of parole, which is likely what he would have gotten, in 2003 during his trial if his attorneys had done what they're supposed to do.
Well, why wasn't this case of bad lawyering caught within Alabama much sooner? Why did it have to go all the way to almost the top of the appeal system to find a case where a man with a 48 IQ and lots of mitigating factors in his life probably shouldn't be executed?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? And it goes to the heart of the problems with Alabama's justice system. You and I have talked about cases from Alabama where the appellate courts do virtually nothing to overturn flawed decisions by juries or by judges. In this case, despite the evidence against him, despite the fact that he basically presented no defense, the vote was 10-2. Alabama is one of those states where you can have actually the only state now where you can have a non-unanimous verdict in a capital case. So even with the deck stacked against him at trial, there were still two jurors who would have voted no, who did vote no, and who would have precluded the death penalty. So this is an example of the systemic problems in Alabama, problems that lasted for a decade through the appellate process, problems that even lasted at the federal trial court level, because a federal trial judge in Alabama essentially rubber stamped what the state courts were doing. He was overturned by this three-judge panel in 2016.
And to be clear, the fact that Mr. Daniel had the worst luck almost imaginable throughout his life is not an excuse for the crimes for which he's convicted.
No.
It's just it's a question of whether or not these mitigating factors, and in fact, his intelligence, might preclude the death penalty.
Yes, that's exactly right. It doesn't excuse what he did, but there are plenty of people in Alabama and in other jurisdictions who have had similar backgrounds, engaged in similar criminal conduct, had similarly bad lawyers at trial, and who have not been rescued.
But Andrew, is anybody sort of taking a step back in Alabama now, given the fact that Mr. Daniel came up with a 48 IQ, and even in a state that's tough on crime and proud of it, sort of saying, we really dodged a very bad, tragic situation here. You can't execute somebody with a 48 IQ.
Yeah, I don't get that sense, right? I think the U.S. Supreme Court is moving in that direction, right? In the past 15 years or so, the U.S. Supreme Court has begun to restrict the ways in which states can try to execute people who are shown to be intellectually disabled. In 2002, the Supreme Court outlawed the execution of the intellectually disabled, but left it to states to sort of come up with their own standards. And just a few years ago, in a Florida case, the court narrowed that rule a little bit further. So the Supreme Court is aware that this is a problem. And like I say, had there not been a deal, had there not been a settlement between the parties, and had this case proceeded, at some point, some judge somewhere in the federal courts, probably back at the 11th Circuit, would have said, you know what, you cannot execute a man who has an IQ of 48. That is so far below the standards that we talk about when we talk about these close cases that we're not going to allow you to do it. And my sense is that that's one of the reasons why Alabama finally relented and said, fine, we're not going to try to proceed with an execution here. We're going to back off.
Andrew Cohen, senior editor with the Marshall Project. Andrew, as always, thanks.
My pleasure.
The Takeaway is supported by Progressive Insurance, offering Snapshot, a device designed to reward safe drivers. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Now that's progressive. By Staples, offering storage solutions for business, including file folders, banker's boxes, and storage bins for getting organized. More at Staples stores or staples.com. Staples, it's pro time. By Moo, offering print products and 24/7 online customer care service to help businesses of any size. Learn more at Moo.com. And Babbel, a language app that teaches real-life conversations in a new language like Spanish, French, and German. Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons are available in the App Store or online at Babbel. B-A-B-B-E-L.com.